It's the State Capitol Report on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Cynthia Schuster, sitting in for Joy Cardine this week. So far this hour, we've been taking a look at what's inside the budget bill that awaits Governor Walker's veto pen and ultimate signature. This half hour, we will get reaction from two legislative leaders about the budget. In a little bit, we'll hear from the Senate Minority Leader Chris Larson, but first I'm joined by Scott Suter, Republican State Representative from Abbotsford and the Assembly Majority Leader. Representative Suter, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. Good morning.
Good morning. Well, you said in a press release last week that you're pleased about this budget because it creates the best environment for jobs and economic growth. Can you talk more about that?
Well, sure. I mean, we have a budget before us that cuts taxes for the middle class throughout the state of Wisconsin. It is a win for taxpayers any way you look at this. We also reinvest in public schools, and we reform government as we promised we would do when we ran for office. So this is a win-win budget in terms of taxpayers, in terms of those individuals who want to succeed, want to create jobs, and want to move Wisconsin forward. And, you know, if you take a look at this budget compared to, you know, a few short years ago when we had massive deficits, we are reinvesting our resources as a result that we've accomplished as a result of our reforms. And we're reinvesting those in the proper places, to taxpayers, to schools, and making sure we have the right priorities to reinvest in the most important things in Wisconsin. And, you know, I just think this budget is far different from budgets we've seen in the past that had massive deficits for taxpayers, unsustainable spending, and now we've got not only our books in order, but we've got the right priorities.
Certainly job creation is on the top of everybody's mind, and I'm wondering what elements of the budget specifically are you looking at and that you consider a crowning achievement for job creation?
Well, first of all, if you take a look at our tax cuts, allowing individuals to keep more of their money and reinvest that money in their priorities and creating jobs, I think is a major win for Wisconsin taxpayers. We also make the right priorities in terms of our reforms. If you look at our unemployment insurance reforms, those are long, long overdue, and they're an important aspect of making sure that small businesses and large businesses are not completely stifled by government bureaucracies and government red tape. So we're making the right investments, making sure that we increase spending where it's needed, but also make sure that we have sustainable growth in the future and utilizing the surplus that we have as a result of our reforms a couple of years ago to make certain Wisconsin keeps on the path to prosperity. And that's very important because, you know, if folks remember a few years ago when we had massive deficits that just, you know, we were just trying to find money just to plug the hole. Now we have a far different situation in the state of Wisconsin. We're actually able to move forward and use that surplus in a wise and effective manner. Mm-hmm.
But you just voted to pass a budget that brings back a structural deficit of about $500 million. Why did you do that?
Well, if you look at the structural deficit will be about $546 million going into the next biennium. It should be noted that, you know, with our tax cut submitted by both the governor and the legislature, there'll still be revenue growth of over $500 million. That means it's likely there will be no deficit that will exist at all, because for every 1% of growth per year in revenue we experience, it brings in an additional $145 million in taxes. It's the second lowest structural deficit in the last 10 budget cycles. It's a significant improvement over the last 8 budgets, thanks to what Governor Walker has done and thanks to what the legislature has done on top of his tax cuts. So, again, second lowest structural deficit in the last 10 budget cycles. I think that's a success, and you know, it could be no structural deficit at all given the revenue growth. But you know, if you take a look at previous budgets, anyone that is going to take a look and single out the structural deficit in this budget might want to take a look at the last few budgets before Governor Walker got elected.
I'm talking with Republican State Representative Scott Souter from Abbotsford. He's also the Assembly Majority Leader, and we're welcoming your calls. He's with us for the next 10 minutes or so at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234, or you can email talk@wpr.org. Representative Souter, your Democratic colleagues in the Assembly didn't put up much of a fight in the way of offering amendments to the bill. How surprised were you by that?
I was surprised, although not completely shocked. It was sad, actually, from my perspective. I mean, we wanted a full and vigorous debate on this budget, and we were prepared for such, and we had negotiated ample time for debate on the state budget, and more time in terms of overall debate than in the last five or six budget cycles. But what I believe is that Representative Barca and the minority party in the Assembly just chose to retreat. They chose to kind of take their ball and go home. And while it was an interesting public relations stunt, I think it was a disservice to their constituents and a disservice to individuals who wanted to see what their priorities were. We were ready for a full and vigorous debate. We'd set time aside for such. We had waited for their amendments to come in. In fact, we had caucused that morning and a few days before and asked them, please get us your budget amendments so we can take a look at them. They refused. They didn't submit a single budget amendment for us to take a look at. The only representative that actually submitted a budget amendment was Representative Halsey, and you know that was about $3 billion in additional spending that we turned down. But overall, I would call it a retreat. And unfortunately, no one knows what those amendments look like because they were never submitted. I think that's unfortunate. Again, it was nice for a press release, but really doesn't show what the minority's priorities are, or how they would have tried to change this budget to make it better.
Well,
they just decided to stop the debate and go home.
Peter Barca said, though, that Republicans had no intention of allowing any Democratic amendments to pass. Is that true? I mean, was he retreating or was he just sort of, recognizing reality?
Well, the problem is no one will ever know. I mean, ideally, we think we had a very, very good product in terms of the budget that was submitted. There's always opportunities for changes. And, you know, I don't know. He claimed that he had over 150 amendments, possibly more. And how are we as the majority party supposed to, say whether or not those amendments were acceptable or not when they won't even submit them?
Well, were you willing to listen to them?
Absolutely. We had set time aside.
Mm-hmm.
If we had not planned on listening to the minority party and taking a look at their amendments and had a full and fledged debate, we would not have set 12 and a half hours aside for Assembly debate on the Assembly floor. So we were prepared to listen, take a look at their amendments. We had a full team ready to look at their amendments, see what they did, and report back to our team in the State Assembly in terms of Assembly Republicans. But that was all for naught because the Assembly Democrats didn't submit any of their amendments aside from the one that was submitted and fully debated by Representative Halsey. And it's fascinating, and I would call it disappointing. It's an interesting tactic, but very, very disappointing, I think, for those that were watching, listening, and depending upon their representatives in the minority to show and highlight what their priorities are. Our priorities were there. They were in the document, and we'll never know what the Assembly Democrats' priorities were because they refused to submit any amendments.
Let's take a call for you. We've got Bob and Clay Banks. Hi, Bob.
Good morning. Thanks for having this show. I had one question, but I came up with another one just as a result of this last conversation. My understanding was that the Democrats were kind of locked out of the budget development process by the Republicans. Is that accurate?
Well, sir, I would say it's inaccurate because there are minority representatives on the Joint Finance Committee, and they always have an opportunity to talk, listen, testify, and those individuals that are from the minority party on the Joint Finance Committee are able to vote on every single amendment and every single change that's offered in the Joint Finance Committee. So I would say that's inaccurate. I think they lock themselves out in some respects by refusing to offer amendments to the budget, which is, historically that just doesn't occur. It is a retreat from doing so. They chose to spend more time at a press conference following than they did on actual debate on the assembly floor. So, no, they were not locked out of the process, nor was the public. It was a full, open, transparent debate process, sometimes painful at times, I'm sure, for those watching, because it was sometimes long. But, again, no, that's simply, I think, inaccurate. While they're in the minority and they don't make the final decisions, there were certainly several 16-0 votes, or 16 members on the Joint Finance Committee, and there were unanimous votes on that committee. So to say they were locked out would be to completely disregard those votes, and each one of those votes is very important.
Representative Souter, there's a concern mainly among Democrats that voucher school expansion could be bigger than previously thought under a provision that was introduced into the Assembly bill late in the process. Were you aware of the loophole as it was introduced, and do you support it?
Well, I think it's inaccurate to call it a loophole, for one. This was a technical amendment that was submitted. There are typically technical corrections submitted when the budget is finalized, even after the Joint Finance process is complete. I don't believe this is a loophole. I believe this is a technical correction that corrected the intent of the original proposal in the Joint Finance Committee. So, no, I don't believe that's the case. I don't believe this is a loophole of any kind, and I think this will simply fix a problem that had existed as a result of, one, drafting errors, and two, the legislative intent not being incorporated into the language that the Joint Finance Committee had voted on. So I don't believe that's accurate at all. I think that's a red herring being, sent out there by some to highlight school choice for their own purposes. But no, this is a reasonable expansion of school choice, and there are limits on that school choice expansion statewide. Mm-hmm. Those limits will be maintained, but no, that it doesn't open the floodgates to school choice universally throughout the state of Wisconsin for everyone. Some would like that. In fact, some in my party would absolutely like that. However, this is a reasonable expansion, and it will remain so.
Okay. Well, one last question. How different do you think the budget will look once the governor is done with it?
You know, that is, the question of the hour. I think in the end, the middle-class tax cuts will remain relatively the same. I'm confident the governor will keep the tuition freeze. It was, an idea from both Democrats and Republicans that I believe will be maintained. I think he'll keep, for the most part, our unemployment insurance reforms that were placed in the budget. And I think he'll certainly continue to hold the line on property taxes. Individual items certainly may change here and there, but I think overall he'll make some reasonable changes, but I don't think there'll be any major surprises. But again, this is part of the process. Individuals, constituents, legislators, everyone is able to contact the governor and ask for those changes, and I'm sure he'll consider those accordingly. And he's been very, very quiet about what changes he's going to make, and I guess we'll wait and see. I don't think there'll be substantial changes to the final product.
Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me. Have a great day.
You too. That was Scott Souter, Republican State Representative from Abbotsford and Assembly Majority Leader. Coming up next, we hope to have Senator Chris Larson, Democratic State Senator from Milwaukee and the Senate Minority Leader. I'm Cynthia Schuster in for Joy Cardine, and you're listening to the State Capitol Report on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. In our weather forecast for today, a flood warning is in effect in Vernon, Crawford, Richland, and Northern Grand counties until 1:30 this afternoon. And the National Weather Service has also issued flood warnings out of the Mississippi River near Prairie du Chien and the Fox River in Kenosha County. Otherwise, heavy rains and thunderstorms expected throughout the day, highs in the 80s. I'm Cynthia Schuster filling in for Joy Cardine, and this is the State Capitol Report. We just heard from State Assembly Majority Leader Scott Souter about his thoughts on the state budget awaiting Governor Walker's approval. And now we'll hear from Senator Chris Larson, a Democratic state senator from Milwaukee and the Senate Minority Leader. Senator Larson, thanks for being with us today.
Thanks for having me, Cynthia.
Well, we know you're not too happy about the state budget. You've already gone on record to call it morally wrong and fiscally unsound. Why do you feel that way?
Well, I think this is one of the worst budgets that's ever come through the state capitol. It continues to underfund education. We had the last budget that cut education more than any other budget in state history, and this one actually had the lowest amount of an increase per pupil spending, I think, in 30 years. So it really undercut education. As far as the public is concerned overall, the public was really dealt out of this budget. There was the least number of public hearings since 1985. All of them were held during daytime hours and most folks are at work. And a lot of the worst provisions that people are talking about were not even included in the budget. The Finance Committee added it in, including the statewide voucher provision that takes vouchers to every corner and every school district in the state where there was no public hearing, where there was no public outcry to have these things. So not only are they underfunding education or community education, this new program will end up taking more funds away. You take that, you stack on, you know, the no bid contracting to buy just about any state building, including the state capitol. You add in the turning down of Medicaid expansion so more people will get sick and die because they decided not to accept this money just for political reasons. And you take all that and you have a tax break that is fiscally unsound, will lead us straight into a deficit, and it favors the wealthy. This is going to be a tough budget for these Republicans to defend. And Cynthia, I don't know if you were tuning into the debate, but what I found really interesting is that a lot of the Republicans spent a lot of their time talking about Jim Doyle and what had happened when that budget came through 4 years ago, when there was a nationwide fiscal crisis, and they were trying to compare that and saying this was much better. So it was really strange that they instead of defending this budget, they continued to look back. So I think they're going to have a tough time defending this. They did on the floor this last week.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything you do like about the budget?
I like that it had bipartisan opposition in both houses. I think it shows that there are enough people starting to pay attention and contact their representatives and their senators and let them know what they're really thinking and where their priorities are. So I think it shows that, look, in both houses, that was not something that people predicted in the offset, so that there's enough people who are upset about this budget that Republicans are not just voting against it but speaking against it. I think it shows that this is unsustainable, and we will turn our state around at some point.
Well, on the one hand, you and other Democrats are upset about the way the budget has come together. But on the other hand, Governor Walker and several of his fellow Republicans did survive a recall election last year, even after the hullabaloo surrounding Act 10. So mm-hmm. Isn't this what Republicans were elected to do when they won the majority?
Well, I would say that, look, the recall where Governor Walker survived, he ended up raising and spending more money than any politician in our state's history. And the big worry was if there is not good legislative oversight, that big sectors of government will be given away wholesale. And that's pretty much what this budget is. It's not that these folks were given millions of dollars thinking, you know, they like the way Scott Walker looks. It's that they were looking to get some return. And so you see the things like bail bondsmen introduced. You see the no-bid contracting of state properties included. And you see more policy, non-fiscal policy introduced in this budget than any other budget. And I think that you see that, look, there's a payoff at this. And I don't think that's what people ended up voting for. And I think you're going to end up seeing as a result of this the Senate chamber switch over from Republican control to Democratic control, so there at least there is a check in power in our state. So it's not unilateral control where everything is one party controlled.
Let's get a caller in for you. We've got Lynn in Green Bay. Hi, Lynn.
Hi. I actually was calling for the Republican, but I can ask you this question as a clarification. I understand that the income tax will be best for people making over $50,000. And won't that increase the local property taxes in this budget? And then the second question is, I really don't understand why we're always sending back federal money when Wisconsin is like number 45 or 46 in getting federal money.
Okay, Lynn. We have just about a minute left, Senator Larson.
Yeah, I'm not sure the exact details on what the tax brackets are, who's going to. I do know that folks making over $100,000 a year are going to get 60% of the benefit. I also know that based on the projections in my home newspaper, property taxes will rise for folks in Wisconsin as a result of this budget because it does not help folks at the local level. And the big problem is that it's not fiscally sound. They end up saying it shows that at the end of it, we're going to hit a deficit. They say that we're going to have projection and growth, but it's the same type of trickle-down Reaganomics, voodoo economics that they're counting on for there to be growth. And unfortunately, yes, we are turning down federal money that would be helpful, including for really good programs across our state. Like Medicaid, that would help 80,000 people get access to health care that they otherwise wouldn't and won't.
Senator Larson, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
That's Senator Chris Larson, Democratic State Senator from Milwaukee and the Senate Minority Leader. Earlier we heard from the Assembly Majority Leader, Scott Souter. You can hear an archive of the show at WPR.org. And it's the State Capitol Report. I'm Cynthia Schuster in for Joy Cardine this week on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.